Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your host, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
Hello and welcome to episode number 32. This is On Tap with Corey and Ira, your bi-weekly exploration of all things Southern Minnesota beer, except for we're taking a bit of a departure today. I'm Corey Butler.
And I'm Ira Carlson.
Ira, what's our departure today?
Well, we're dipping back into our fermentation friends, and we've got Nate with Keepsake Cidery out of Dundas on, and had a really fascinating conversation with him, kind of really touching on a little bit of stuff that, at least in my case, I didn't understand what was all involved in making cider, so that was really kind of a fun discussion. Of course, we got several really fun beers to talk about, and some great news from a couple of the surrounding communities. So it's a fun day to talk about beer.
Yeah, the conversation with Nate was definitely educational. We are probably going to have to trim down the episode a little bit, but we learned definitely a lot about the cider making process, the business they have going on here in nearby Dundas. Obviously, we don't want to spoil it too much, so we'll let the conversation speak for itself. We do have a number of good beers here, but before we get to that, I want to thank you for tuning in today and giving us a little bit of your time, whether you're listening live on 95 The One or checking us out on podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, or on our website, ontapnorfield.com, where you can find all our prior shows, as well as the one you're currently listening to. You can find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, at ontapnorfield, Instagram, ontap with Corey and Ira. You just alluded to, maybe we'll just jump into this now. You had the opportunity to head over to a new brewery opening. This is going to air a little bit later than what we're recording, but last week, when you were there, Spiral Brewing in Hastings just opened, and you posted stuff on Instagram, which is, you know, the perfect segue there.
Yeah, I had a. They were nice enough to invite you and I over for kind of their little early press opening right before their ribbon cutting ceremony and stuff. So, got a chance to get a quick little tour of the brewery and get a chance to enjoy some of the beers. They're opening up with about four beers: a Kolsch, a Red IPA, a Porter, and a Stout. A couple more on tap and. By the time that you're listening to this, they have opened officially. They're opening up on Friday, April 20th. So by the time you hear this, they've been open for a week. But it is an absolutely gorgeous space. Beautiful, beautiful space. They're running a 15-barrel system, but they're running 30-barrel fermenters to kind of really be able to, they're going to be doing double batches
really pushing
and stuff.
Out. And,
yeah, and but it's a beautiful space. They're going to have, I think I counted 12 tap lines by the time they're done. So once they get that filled out. But it's a beautiful space downtown Hastings, and they were wonderful, wonderful hosts, and it's really beautiful. So if you get a chance, I took a couple photos, posted out on most of our social media channels, and I'm definitely looking forward to getting back there.
Yeah, as I'm known to do, I've been following their progress since they announced, so it's been, for me, a long process. I'm sure even longer for them, but the space has looked great. I haven't had the chance to get out there, just as you alluded to. I wasn't able to join you today when we are recording this, but and you posted those photos. It looks great. I can't wait to get out there. I'm sure by time this airs, there's probably a good chance I paid them a visit. We'll call it a coin flip, but I hope I get out there. There is another brewery that has opened now also, when this airs, opened last weekend, in Prior Lake. We've talked about them a few times. It's Boathouse Brothers Brewing in downtown Prior Lake. So it's nice to see some representation in downtown areas south of the river. So downtown Prior Lake, too, their space looks great. Been watching their photos as that space develops. Looks great. Hastings, downtown Hastings, you can see right from the bridge. Big bold sign stands out right there in downtown. So it's good to see that representation of Southern Minnesota, especially in the heart of those communities. So congratulations to both those operations for opening. I can't wait to visit both of them. I'm sure I'll get there a time or two in the next few months for sure.
Yeah, and the people over at Spiral were really nice. I had a great chance to talk to pretty much all of them, you know, whether it be the head brewer or the couples that really put this thing together. And so great historical old building. They repurposed some stuff from the building, which we'll obviously let them talk about when we have them on the show in the future. But they're looking forward to being on the show. So hats off to them, and looking forward to getting over to Prior Lake as well.
We've got a great show coming up. Stick around.
And now time for Beers of the Week, brought to us today by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. Our first offering today is another one that we've gotten out of War Pigs, which is a kind of a nice little combination between Three Floyds and McKellar out of Germany. And this is their Salmon Pants Premium Lager. So again, this one's really interesting in that, you know, it's that big combo between two pretty big breweries, but then they're just kind of going for a pretty solid, I don't want to say simple, but a good solid lager. It's only coming in at about 5.3 ABV. It does have some hoppiness to it, but really kind of just a good, easy drinking lager. I'm definitely enjoying it. It's an interesting one. I don't know if I'd seek it out on a regular basis, but if it were on tap somewhere and I was feeling a lager, I think I'd definitely reach for this one.
Yeah, Salmon Pants Premium Lager. So Premium Lager, it's an interesting idea it gives you of what you should expect in the beer just by the name, right? Because Premium Lager has been around forever. This is not your daddy's Premium Lager. I think the keyword that you said in there, that there is a hoppiness to it. Now, it's not overbearing. It's not an ale. It's not a pale ale. It's not an IPA. But there definitely is a hoppy component to this. It's another cool collaboration beer between Three Floyds and McKellar. This came out last summer at the same time the other two beers came out, the Foggy Geezer and the Lazarite. I hadn't had this one yet because it's not something I usually seek out, like you kind of mentioned, but I kind of like it. I think it's good. Like you said, it's not overwhelming. It's a nice, easy drinking beer, what a lager should be. So well done on that. And the other offering we have this week is from Mankato Brewery, so just down the road. It's their new Teleporter Hazelnut Porter. So I've had a couple sips of this. I've tried it out of a glass. I've tried it out of a can. And here's the good thing, bad thing for me. Good thing, it tastes like Nutella. Bad thing, I don't like Nutella. So maybe you should just disregard what I'm about to say. But there is a nice roastiness to this, a nice toastiness. It definitely tastes like Nutella, so I'm assuming that's what they're going for. The hazelnut aroma, I do pick that up. So what they're advertising this beer as is definitely there. But it's like someone saying, I don't like sours, and then drinking a sour and not liking the sour. So now Nutella is obviously a very popular spread that people like. I don't happen to be one of them. So this might be a great beer for the vast majority of people out there. But it's not something that I would probably go back to. It is a nice put-together beer, though. That roastiness is good in there. But the Nutella is a pretty prominent flavor, as it should be. It's basically the first part of the name of the beer. So you think that'd come through. What would you think of it?
Well, it definitely hits you with flavor right off the bat. I mean, I kind of do enjoy it. I've never really had Nutella, so I can't say whether it's good or bad. But I do like the idea, instead of it just being yet another peanut butter porter, it's a different nut, it's a different flavor. It gives it a little bit of an extra bitterness compared to peanut butter, which could be really sweet. Kind of has just a different kind of a flavor to it. But I'm kind of on the edge of this is a little more novelty to me than anything, in the sense that, all right, maybe not novelty is not the right word, but it's one of those beers that I'm probably not going to have a bunch of, but one glass of it here or there is definitely worth it. But it's definitely a fun one. If you are a person that enjoys Nutella, this is probably the beer for you. So, and also it might be actually kind of interesting. This is another one where I know I bring it up a lot, but be interesting to see what you could pair this with.
Plenty of desserts, I would assume.
Yeah.
and probably the right cheeses.
Yep. But anyways, if you want to try either of these beers or any of the other beers we've talked about on previous shows, they can be conveniently found south on Highway 3 in Dundas at Firehouse Liquor.
Look for the fire truck. All right, we're coming to you live from the studio. We have what Ira likes to call a fermentation friend in studio today. You would have heard that if you heard the top of the show, but maybe we're one of those people who skips through on the podcast right to the interview, because that really is the meat of the show. And I'm proud to say we are opening our doors today. We've had distilleries on before, and now we have our first cidery. We have Nate here from Keepsake Cidery. Nate, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we've had you on the list for a long time. When we were talking about doing the show last year, actually a year and a half ago now, starting the show, we went through all the breweries that we thought would make sense. And then, okay, who else can come on? We looked at distilleries, we looked at cideries. You're right in our backyard, so obviously you made perfect sense. We just want to make sure the time made sense for you, because I'm sure you're not very active, at least in the public eye, in January or December. So we want to make sure we had you on the show in time where people can come visit you and buy your product. Obviously, your product's out year-round, and we'll get to that. But why don't you tell people about Keepsake Cidery, kind of your location, where you can be found?
Yeah, so we are, like you said, just in your backyard. We're very close to where we're sitting right now, just down 3. We're in Dundas. We're right next to the Cannon River Wilderness area. We're orchard-based. That's the heart of what we do, is apples. So we're there on the orchard. We produce all our cider there. We bottle it. We press. Everything that goes into it is done at the cidery in Dundas, at the end of a dead-end road. But just a hop and skip and a jump from where we are right now. And we do have a tasting room that we are actually renovating and building up right now. It's going to start as soon as the snow melts and we can start work. We're going to build out a place with...
So by June, at least.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll start working on it. We have road restrictions.
We're recording this a couple weeks before it airs at the end of the month, end of April. So hopefully by time this airs... Yeah.
We're excited to get going on when it does warm up. The tasting room is going to be all new indoor space, you know, a bar, food, you know, a lot of cool cider you can't get anywhere else, and a lot of really fun outdoor experiences, music. We're looking forward to getting art of all types out. We're really excited about building a tasting room. It's so much fun to get people out to your place. We love traveling around just like you two do. It's great to go to the source, right?
Absolutely.
And we're just happy that we can make a source for local cider made with all local apples that we think really reflects our product.
So is it the same building you were doing tastings out of before, or
right,
are you building a new location around that?
So? No, so the same building, but the next side of it. So yeah, before, you've been out there, you've seen it, but before we had, you know, two old barrels with a beautiful slab of maple on top of it, and that's about it. We wanted to get...
You had a couple nice picnic tables outside.
Yeah, we had
outside,
some picnic tables, right.
You know, sitting out in the sun,
right,
or at least semi-sun, you know, you had a nice little shaded area while you sat outside.
Yeah, I shouldn't be so hard on ourselves, but we did have some outdoor space, but we wanted to up it. We put our toes in the pond and we got really good feedback, and so we decided let's jump in. So we're gonna have a nice we're talking like Irish pub meets Minnesota farm indoor space. An outdoor space, a lot bigger outdoor space, we're gonna be able to accommodate a lot more people, but still, you know, stay small and focused, and you'll be able to have that. This isn't going to be a huge beer hall where you can get lost. This is going to be, you can come and see the place, talk to the cider maker.
Intimate.
See the apples, go walk through the apples. You know, we're definitely, that is, you know, what we're apple centric. So the orchard is just a mere 20 steps from where you'll be drinking cider.
Yeah, I think we could probably delve into that a little bit more. I like starting the store at the beginning because I think people always want to hear the origin of these dreams and these aspirations people have and how they follow through. And being our first cider guest, I think that's especially interesting to our audience. How does one get into making cider? We have that question for people who make beer, and that's still few and far between. But cider is obviously a whole different world.
Yeah, for my origin story, like, it makes me sound like a superhero. I can't do that every day.
Genesis 2.
You're from Dundas. We're all superheroes.
Yeah, right.
I'll reserve comments.
The Dundas 1003. So
you meek humans.
For me, it was it all started with, I was a farmer out west, east in West Massachusetts, at a really cool farm out there, and I realized I wanted to grow apples. So I was in the field of carrots, realizing this was the wrong field, and started learning about apples, and then I started to think through my business plan. Meanwhile, I'm a brewer. You know, I love beer also. I was brewing beer all the time, and I was starting to volunteer at breweries and really caught that fermentation bug.
Out east you were volunteering? Okay.
And so I thought, maybe I'll do a brewery. Then we moved out to Minnesota to look for an orchard. We lived in the cities for a while, right the cusp of, you know, when I first moved here, you know, so long ago, when it was just, you know, Surly and Summit and Liftbridge. I think that was all. Then a couple years later, here we are, right? I was volunteering at breweries then and thinking about this. So on one hand, I'm definitely going to be an apple farmer. That was my 100% I'm going to do this. But then the other side of me was saying, well, maybe I'll brew too. Maybe do a little brewing. And one day one of my friends was, Nate, you know, there's this thing called cider. And I said, no. And he said, are you sure? And I started thinking about it. I didn't like cider. And I realized, I don't know what your first beer was, but I can answer that, and you're welcome to throw it out there.
Mine today
was,
or?
No, yeah. Well, your first beer of life, right?
Yeah.
Mine was Keystone Ice, and I don't
wow.
think, I wouldn't say that was the best. But
memories.
I'm a Colorado kid, and that's what Colorado kids drink when they're youngsters.
Sure.
And I thought beer was horrible. And so I thought, you know what, maybe I should...
Rightfully so, with that start.
Right. So I should probably give the same
respect. Unfortunately, I was the kid that actually probably embraced that one.
Yeah.
All right, but anyways.
Well, I thought I'd keep going like I did with beer. And when I went with beer, I found breweries like Avery, for example, and another brewery is Odell.
Better beer.
Better beer. So I thought, well, does that happen in cider? And I got to tell you, really did. I tried some ciders from England and France and some ciders from the Northwest and the Northeast of the U.S., and I was floored. I just didn't know that this you could do this with cider, and it quickly became one of my favorite drinks. And then I was just, it was like a light, like a fire was lit. Like I had this passion for apples, and all of a sudden I could take it and combine it with the passion that I had for fermentation, and I could feel good about it, you know.
Sure.
And I find that, you know, some of the best beverages in the world are well made ciders. So I just took off from there. I just talked to anybody I could talk to. Started making ciders. My first batch was a small batch with my first partner in business. We made 12 gallons of cider from all wild apples from Iowa. That was our first batch, and it was awesome. It was funky and crazy, but, you know, so much fun. And that was when it started. You know, that was now 8 years ago, I guess, 7 years ago. 2012. I can't remember those years.
I would have, being a superhero, I would have put your origin story within Europe, England, somewhere in there, because cider being a huge thing. I mean, even back when I went over in 1989, cider was a really big thing. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand it and everything else. So we've had a lot of other people, you know, brewers on with their origin story, since we're going to keep with that, with a lot of you know, Germany or other kind of backstories,
European
and stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, European.
They've been around for a while, so there's a lot of,
right, but you know, different backstories. So I'm actually surprised that you didn't end up with that cider background from that. You found it locally or just within your own desire and chase.
Yeah, it's definitely influenced by the European, because that is part of the culture, and that's part of, you know, what's passed down. And cider is, you know, the argument. We don't know exactly who was first, whether wine, beer, or cider. There's arguments on every side, but they have a long heritage. All three of those drinks have a long heritage. Cider, unfortunately, in our country, hit a huge roadblock in the late 1800s and then into the 1900s with Prohibition, and beer taking over. Beer was cheaper to make, easier to find the raw materials, and cider didn't... beer was able... It's a funny story, but beer was able... Brewers were able to make pop. They made soda in the Prohibition, floored the business. Yeah. Wineries were ingenious. They were able to sell they sell concentrated wine to take home and not make wine. It said
sure wine.
It shows you not how to make wine on there, which of course everybody followed that to the T, how to make not wine. And then the distilleries, I love the stories of distilleries. Basically the pharmacies could give away a little, I don't know, you probably know this stuff, but they could give away a pint a day. So the pharmacies would give out, and plus they just had ingenious ways of bootlegging. That's why we all know about, you know, Al Capone was bootlegging whiskey,
course,
right?
So, yeah.
And but cider, they ripped out all the orchards, and they just couldn't get back from that. So that's the main reason why in the U.S. cider kind of died down, was this rise in beer, and the Prohibition just knocked the stuffing out of the cider industry. But it started coming back in, you know, 80s, 90s, and then it slowly creeped in, and then all of a sudden exploded. It's amazing. I think we've gone three times more ciders today, 2018, than we had in 2012, I think it is. So
these are all small independent ciders?
Many of them are.
There are obviously, we'll call them big cider out there. I don't know if that's a term that you guys use in the industry.
Well, that I was going to ask is, I guess if we're going to use that term, big cider, was like Reds, you know, and others like that, the ones that at least opened people's eyes to start working again?
Angry Orchard came to mind, which is a Boston beer company, Sam Adams.
Yeah, Angry Orchard.
Which is obviously very sweet and very different from what you make, obviously.
Yeah, and they try to make, they're starting to go towards the dry, they try. But yeah, very different. I mean, to kind of give an example, I think this is a great kind of introduction to what cider is and what we believe cider is and what cider can be. The big guys, you know, they have their place in the market, and there are millions of fans of what they do. But they make it differently. What they'll do is they'll use concentrate, they'll bring it in. They will add water, obviously, to the concentrate. They'll add yeast. They'll ferment that to dry as fast as they can. Then, when it's bone dry in maybe 3 to 7 days, they will add sugar and add water. It'll already have been chapitalized, so the alcohol level will be like 12%, and that water will cut it down to wherever they want it to be, 5-6%, which really helps the bottom line, because mm-hmm. water's cheap, right?
Yeah.
And then they'll add flavors and additives to make it taste good, because, frankly, cider after 2 weeks, as much like wine after 2 weeks, it doesn't taste that great. But you can make it taste fine, and, I mean, we've probably all had Angry Orchard. It might be too sweet for you, but it's not like, you know, disgusting. It's just might not be your product.
It's fine. Yeah.
You can do that, and it works, and it works really well, and it's probably the best business plan. Then there's cider like ours, where it's 100% cider, 100% from apples. We press all our own juice, and we ferment it as long as we can. I've got stuff that's still fermenting that I pressed in October. It's just slowly dropping down in bricks or specific gravity. We will age for up to 12, 15 months. We don't add sugars. We don't add additives. We've even phased out sulfites. We keep them around in case we have to use them, but we haven't had to use them in two years. But see, that's a huge difference in product. In the beer world, I would say it's a difference between, Coors Light and Cascade, if you're familiar with Cascade. Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about aging,
Forager.
Most of us think of beer, they're aging in either a bright tank or other format or whatever else. Are you aging in some kind of a tank before you bottle, or are you talking aging in a bottle itself?
That's a great question. So we have chosen, we will do some barrel aging, but most of our aging is in stainless steel. We just think that's the best medium for consistent cider. We don't look for a consistency in our cider, but for a consistent process.
Is that vessel also chosen for temperature control?
Some of them are. Yep. Some of them do have temperature control. Basically, we look for white wine style stainless steel tanks. We'll age in those from anywhere. We'll ferment and age in those from anywhere from 4 or 5 months of the fastest we've ever gone, and that rarely happens, to 12 to 15 months. And then oftentimes we'll have another conditioning. So let's say I have a cider in the stainless steel. I've pressed it. It's a lot of times we don't use yeast. We use a lot of wild, spontaneous ferments. That's kind of our... That's the way I love making cider. It's more exciting for me. Like, it's a lot of character. I really want you to taste Minnesota. I want you to taste here. So not only am I going to use local fruit, but now I'm using local yeast, because it's just yeast on the air, yeast on the cloths, yeast on the apples. And then we're going to bottle it, and we love bottle-conditioned products. So we'll put in that bottle with a little bit of usually our own juice.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it still hasn't fermented, we'll put it in when it still has a little bit more sugar to drop out. And then we'll let that sit for usually 3 to 6 months more. So to add on, you got the big guys making their cider in less than 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks if they're going to do an aged cider. And then you got me. Nobody listening.
You guys,
this is business sense, but I think this makes the best ciders. For example, the one we're drinking, the Curnaronia here, this aged for 9 months, 2 months on Curnaronia from my farm. That picked up some Brett, that picked some wild yeast, probably tasting that, a little funk, some earthiness to it. Then we condition it with a little bit of Homestead Apiary, Corey, his honey.
Yes.
So that's gone. That's all fermented out. And that was 3 more months. So this is 12 months in the making before I released it. That's a typical sort of life of a keepsake cider. It's going to take a long time.
Yeah, I was going to say we're sipping on one here.
Nate and I've been talking for at least 2-3 years. You know, came out to a Dukes event or whatever.
Yeah, we love the Dukes.
I have literally learned so much about your cider within the last 5 minutes that I didn't know before that. This is really amazing to hear kind of what you're doing with it, because I'm a little more excited about what you're doing. The last time I was out in your tasting room, you weren't there, didn't get a chance to talk to you. I want to come back out, and I want you to show me this stuff, because this is cool. So this is really cool.
I look forward to showing you, and anybody wants to, we love showing the process. I mean, we had talked before the show, a good friend, Austin, that you've had him before from Forager, love his products, love what he does, and those kind of processes, to me, brewing's great, but it's very formulaic, and it's fun, but once you've seen one brew house, once you've seen one pale ale made, you can pretty much guess how the next guy's going to make it. And some people make better pails than others, and I think that has a lot to do with the ingredients, especially water and other things like that. But that's another story. But once you've seen one pale ale, you've seen them all. Where if you go to a sour beer, or in this case, like, you know, these aged ciders where we're doing these fun processes, I find it very exciting. It's very just invigorating to see how that long age and these little funny things. I mean, there's no flavors added or sugars added. It's just a long process. When I put those currant and aronia berries, for example, in this cider, I crushed them by hand and then I let them sit and I made a cap over the whole cider. So that was basically the oxygen barrier. But that's picking up yeast. It already picked up more yeast and the breath's coming in there.
Roaming around in the air. Right?
And it's just, so it's just dropping things in. And that just, you should have tasted. And I love bringing people, you know, giving little people a taste of things that are in the tanks, because we always have stuff transitioning in our, there's never a time in our cidery where there's not something aging or working or fermenting, or and so I loved like giving people like a drink of this, and then like 3 weeks later they come back and say, remember that cider you tried? Like, try it now. 3 weeks later, like, what happened?
Changes.
Biology.
Yeah.
little tiny things happened a lot.
So you're not so dependent on a harvest cycle of the idea that you can't really start brewing till October or something like that. You know, you're able to store apples and use them in the cycle or time you need?
No, we're very dependent on it, but because of our long age, so I'll be only pressing during a certain time of year because, yeah, once the apples are gone, I could order apples from Washington, or I could order from Michigan even, or I could order juice from both of those places. In fact, it's less expensive than local apples, but my rule, when I'm a farmer first, so when I sat down to build this business, we made a rule, said we have to use local fruit. There's no time to compromise. Even if there's a bad year, that year we'll make a little batch of cider and call it bad year cider and, you know, go from there. Or we'll sell pumpkins. that's just how it's going to have to be.
Well, you have a farm out there that would work well as a pumpkin farm as well. So.
Well, let's talk about Goodyear cider. We've talked about the current Aronia. Mm-hmm. I was going to say Aronia before, but you said it before. I got to say it. The dry 2017. We talked a little bit about the process, but talk to us about what we're tasting, because as Ira likes to say, we're not experts in anything. We just we're constantly researching. So describe to the listeners what they would get from this.
Well, yeah, I appreciate your humility, but I will say, Corey, that you are an expert in your own taste. I talk about this with a lot of people that come to taste. You know your taste better than anybody else. So I describe with this cider, it is bone dry, especially one. So another difference between beer and cider is that cider is 100% fermentable sugars, easy sugars. There's three different types of sugar in the cider, and they're all pretty easy to ferment for yeast. They love it. It's the easy, you know, it's a great time. Whereas beer obviously has that sort of that has the complex sugars that cannot be fermented unless you get Brett in there. That's why some of your sours and your lambics will be dry, but most beers that don't have that time and that Brett are going to be in the same spot. This is 100% dry. It didn't need Brett, but it picks up Brett when I added those berries. If you had tasted this before I added the currants and the Aronia, so again, I went out and picked them, crushed them, macerated them, threw them over, made this cap, and let them sit on the berry. This is very different than a lot of other ciders that'll try to be juicy. They'll add fruit juice or fruit extracts. You'll see a lot of like raspberries and currant, even strawberry I've seen. I'm not going for that. I'm more influenced by winemakers and and lambic. I love sours and lambics from Belgium. I looked into their processes and was really inspired by what they do. Again, you know, down at Forager, you know, I always chat about these kind of processes where the fruit isn't necessarily a juice component. It's more like the skin. The whole fruit is so important to get the whole fruit in there and the yeast. And so we really wanted to just bring the whole essence of currant aroma. I didn't squeeze it and just pour the juice in and then add some sugar so it would be sweet. I wanted it to taste kind of like a funky currant and aroma. I don't know if you've ever had those berries, but they're not you know, delicious popping berries you just throw in your mouth and run school or whatever.
I've never had it, but there's a depth of flavor there for sure.
I
think currant is a bitter, but this is, yeah, I'm really enjoying this. This is, again, I'm not normally a cider person. Hmm? If my wife, or I should say, if my daughter would let her be on the air, she's 23, by the way, of legal age, she is a huge cider fan, and I think she would really enjoy this. I mean, I know you talk about it being dry, and it's funny, I keep feeling that it's juicy, yet it is dry. That there's just the berry flavors and a couple other things just keep bubbling forward, yet it does stay dry. This is really a fun cider. I don't think I've had this one before, because there's at least one of the ones coming up here that I've had before. But Nate, I'm really impressed by this cider. So,
well, it's, you know, I can't take a lot of credit for it. We are all about the fruit, and that fruit that we put in there, that's what brings those flavors. That, you know, I just pick it when I feel like it's ready, and I put it together, and I tell people I'm more of a fruit shepherd. I just kind of put the fruit, I press the fruit when I feel it's ready, and I try to blend it to the taste. And for this one, I am really happy with how it came out. You know, it's got that tannin from the currant and the Aronia. They're both very astringent tannic berries. The tartness that almost sometimes to me reminds me a little bit of like a grapefruit in the background. And it's got that, I love the flavor, the earthiness, the funkiness of the Brettanomyces, and that all comes together to give it a body without sugar, which is
I'm impressed by this one very much.
Yeah, Nate, I appreciate the humility, but you should take on a title beyond fruit herder.
You're educating beer guys about wine, about cider right now, and this is amazing. So
I do want to ask, though, about the fruit aspect before I forget. You had mentioned out east you were a carrot farmer. But you said your passion was for Apple. Mm-hmm. What draws you to apples?
Yeah, I've asked that many times. So out east, I was a diverse vegetable farm, CSA, Mountain View, and Food Bank Farm. And I loved it. And we have a lot of our friends here. I mean, this area, Northfield, has so many great farms. We are so lucky to be surrounded by all these wonderful vegetable farms. And it is a real worthy profession. And I will tell you, it is a lot of work. I was in that carrot field just exhausted. And I was pulled towards apples because I felt like if I'm going to be doing all this work, which I did want to do, I knew I wanted to keep farming. I wanted to keep my back broken and my hands dirty. I knew I needed to have a real passion for what I was growing. And right away, I was like, apples. You know, apples and berries were the things that, since I was a young kid, I grew up. I was trying to think, what was it? Like, I think that's a good question, Corey. What drew me to apples, trigger, in particular? Right. And the only thing I can tell you is this one story. I grew up in upstate New York for part of my life. My dad was in the Air Force. So I followed him around, obviously. And in upstate New York is a big apple region, one of the biggest in the country. And my first successful business venture, after trying to sell ices and lemonade, was I went to my neighbor and picked her apples one fall, and my friend and I, Chris Garippa, we sold apples.
And shout out to Chris.
Yeah, he called me. He called me a couple of months ago, and out of the blue, hadn't heard from him in years, and he reminded me of this.
You heard you were coming on the show?
No, he reminded me of the show. No, he reminded me.
He heard the show just up the road from you.
You're doing cider? And he's like, remember when we sold those apples? Like, yeah. So we made $3.35. And that was our most successful. And I just kind of wonder if, like, I thought, you know, there's something to this apple business. You know, if I had known. But yeah, I love apples. I love growing apples. I love eating apples. I think they're just a wonderful fruit and versatile.
So you said 2011 is when you kind of in earnest wanted to go this route. Mm. Obviously, there's creating the business plan, creating the business, acquiring land,
right,
acquiring crops. When did Keepsake Cidery come to fruition as an actual business?
Right, yeah. So we knew we wanted to be in Minnesota, and we wanted to grow apples, and we wanted to do our cidery in Minnesota. And then we just started looking around. We had lived in Minnesota since 2009. We had slowly been kind of focusing on different areas in the state, and we fell in love with Northfield. We just, the people here, those farmers I mentioned, were incredible. And I will say, as a side note, we had very high expectations for this community, and we came down, and it's one of those rare times when your expectations are exceeded. We love it here. We're really happy we decided to put down 6,000 roots, because it's a pretty big deal to put down, to plant a lot of trees.
Sure.
And we are glad we picked the right spot. But there was a reason. We took a long time to pick that spot. So we picked that spot. We found this. We love where we are. We hope everybody can come out and visit. We're surrounded by old growth woods, the Cannon River Wilderness area.
For people locally, you're about 3 miles south of Menards, right?
Yep.
And then head east.
Yep.
Is there a sign? I can't remember if there's a sign.
We put a sign on when we're open, but yeah.
So. Otherwise, if you don't live in the area and don't know what the hell I'm talking about, Google it.
Right, yeah, there is the Google internet.
Or I'll show my age, and if you knew where Vi's costume shop is, take a left there.
Right, right before Vi's, or right after if you're coming from Vanco. Exactly, yep.
I love showing my townie knowledge.
there's an amazing amount of people that I can use that. I'll say, well, do you know where the costume shop was? Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And they take a
yonder.
But we decided on the space because that's so important. Site planning, you know, anytime anybody asks me about orchards, I always can't stress, you know, it's just like anything. If you're opening a brewery or a distillery or a winery, location matters, right? But in this case, you're not thinking necessarily like a business, but you're thinking about, you know, are there any frost pockets? Does the soil drain well? You know, what are the pests going to be like? You know, how can I lay out my fields? I'm not, you know, driving a tractor 5 feet and then churning it every time. Everything worked out really well for the orchard. We love that spot for the orchard. And then my wife Tracy and I owned the business, and we had a partner at the time. We figured out our name and our ideas. And at the time we didn't know what we were going to do. So we went out to retail stores. And so we slowly built up the business. The partner left within the first year. He decided to do something different. He's a great friend. But then Tracy and I, you know, we took over 100%, and Tracy took off, and she is just an extraordinary partner, extraordinary help. She's got us now in 180 locations from Rochester to north of the cities.
That's awesome.
We're in a lot of really wonderful restaurants, some here locally.
Self-distributed?
All self-distributed. Yeah, we're a farm winery, so we get to do that, which is, you know,
a lot of mileage,
a privilege, right, and responsibility, and a curse.
We talked to a few breweries that, you know, doing self-distribution, they're really happy if they're in 10. you know, so cidery obviously is a little different. You know, it's a right. different market right now, but that's impressive.
Yeah, and that's all her, pretty much.
Do all your apples get used for cider, or do you sell
We do sell some, because that's a thing. One day, I was thinking about it, and one year we used them all, and then the next year we had a pretty big harvest, and all of a sudden I realized I was at a really great class. I took a class done by the UK Cider Association. And I'm sitting there thinking about cider and how many apples I'm going to use, you know, how many apples like cider I can use out of my apples. And then all of a sudden I was, whoa, wait. Like, I got in this to grow apples. I still want to feed people. So we have a definite commitment to selling apples and selling a lot of apples. We're an organic farm. We really strongly believe in growing apples in a really healthy, strong way for the environment, but also for the consumer. And we feel like we can grow a really great apple for people to come pick up at the farm. So we will have apples during the season. And really cool, weird apples. I mean, our orchard's got 40 varieties. We've got apples like Golden Russet, Wixen Crab, Blue Pearmain, Chisel Jersey.
I was going to ask, is
Chisel Jersey, I saw that guy on MTV, right?
Yeah, right.
40 varieties. I originally was going to simply ask, like, oh, is there, like, what are your primary apples? But if you have 40, you're literally taking a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Yeah, to make good cider, I believe you can make single varietals. Like, you know, in the wine world, so I'm trying to, you know, to kind of show you from the differences and parallels and similarities with beer, but also obviously cider is much like a wine. It's made like a wine. And in the wine world, you have your Cabernet, your Chardonnay, right? That's your single varietals. Mm-hmm. You do have those in the cider world. Kingston Black, Golden Russet, are two examples. Wixen Crab, you can make one. We're playing around with Chestnut Crab. We've done 2 years in a row to see if it has some legs as a single varietal. We love it. Very distinct apple. A U of M apple that we think could possibly make a nice single varietal. But most of the time, just like wine, you're going to be wanting to blend. You're going to want to bring different aspects to the cider. There are apples that have tannins in them. You want to bring them for tannin. You know, that gives that structure, that body, mouthfeel, that little bit of complexity. There are apples that have particular types of acidity. You want to make sure you have that acidity, that brightness.
Is it largely trial and error, or do you have kind of a, you learn by what others have already done, so you know a certain apple might pair with another apple, and is it just two apples, or are you putting 10 apples
right.
into a blend?
I think it's both. You can learn, and you should learn from other people. I strongly feel like you don't have to constantly try to reinvent wheels.
Yeah.
That being said, you know, every year is different. Every orchard is different. We work with all local orchards, and it's been really fun for me to, like, I'll go get a keepsake apple, for example, from one orchard, and then I'll go get a keepsake apple from another orchard, and the bins will be sitting next to each other, and, you know, somebody on the crew will be like, all right, this keepsake, and then whatever, what apple's this? And I'm like, keepsake. Like, and I said, I know, I get it. They look so different. Apples in the same year even can be different because they're grown in a different orchard. It's a different
soil,
sport, different
yeah.
soil. There's just different, so many variables. So I think you want to, you know, if someone tells you, hey, Wixen Crab makes a great single varietal, that probably is true, but you need to find out for yourself on your soil, at your place, if that's going to make it the same kind of cider for you. You know, so it's both.
Are apples more inclined DNA-wise to mutate a little bit? You know, because obviously, University of Minnesota, you keep talking about, they keep coming out with new versions of apples mm-hmm. and everything else and doing stuff. Are apples really versatile in that sense that you can quickly kind of, I guess mutate is not the right word, but, you know, create a new version of them rather easily that, like you talked about, keepsake from one to the other? It's easy for them to be different because even in a little different proximity, they change, or is it literally just soil and location?
Yeah, just soil, location, the sun of that year. Yeah, because they don't mutate hardly at all. Every so often, you'll get a field mutation.
Okay.
That's the sport of it. But it's very rare because apples are grafted, so they're not by seed. So that variety is grafted onto a rootstock, so it's going to be true to that variety. Every so often, you'll get an example in Minnesota is Fireside and Connell Red. Those are two of the same apple, but they look very different because a farmer found a mutation. But it's very rare.
Okay. The only reason I ask is U of M seems to, like, release a new apple
oh, yeah.
every, like, 3 or 5 years. Like, mm-hmm. it seems like they're
it's all made in a petri dish.
You know, yeah. It kind of seems like they're rediscovering the apples or something. But
yes.
it sounds like it's a lot of it's long years of stuff that is finally coming to fruition that people are starting to see.
Yeah, and the way they do it is it takes so much work. They're such hardworking people. They're, you know, I've heard jokes about how many apples they have to taste during the fall. It's, you know, thousands and thousands. Because they, you know, how they do is they're going to cross them, but then they plant 10,000 trees and see which one is good, and then they take that one, and they get the pollen from that, and they, you know, it's just a long process. It's a really cool science, but it's at the same time, it's a long often fruitless. You know, out of those 10,000,
like what you did there,
one fruit things, one apple might come out. I mean, they're just thousands and thousands and thousands of trials.
Sure.
And maybe they get Honeycrisp, you know.
That's science, so, though, right?
That's crazy.
Is the U of M one of the premier apple,
growers,
research, facilities? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably arguments. I think one of the premier can't be argued. I think that they're, whether or not they're the premier can be argued. I think I have a very high opinion of them, obviously. I think they've done an amazing job of producing really great apples that are not only winter hardy, but also just delicious to eat. I have a lot of favorite. Obviously, I named my cidery after one of them. Keepsake Sure. Apple is a Minnesota apple. Obviously, the Honeycrisp has gone on to fame and fortune. I think
Never
Sweet
heard
16,
of it.
Yeah. You'll hear about it one day.
It's coming.
But there's so many good apples that they do. We're hoping and that they can take that same energy, passion, and expertise and help us find the Minnesota Cider Guild is a group of local cideries that are talking to them about, will they try to help us find a Minnesota northern growing appropriate tannic cider apple. Cider apples are not good to eat. Mm-hmm. A cider apple, you know, is commonly called a spitter because it's got that bitterness that you don't normally look for when you look for like an apple like Honeycrisp again.
Apple, should we be making cider out of that?
We often do, right. Dolgo crabs, chestnut crabs, Wixen crabs, those are crabs that Centennial, Hughes crab, Virginia crab, yeah, there's so many great crab apples. That being said, if you've ever tried to pick crab apples, it gets real real pain in the butt fast.
Open the second bottle there?
Yeah, so the next one, we're staying close to dry, a little off dry. This one I brought for wanted to tell you pretty obvious reasons. This is our wooden spirit cider. We're always excited about collaborations, and this one's with our good friends just down the road, literally down the road at Loon Liquor, Simeon and Mark. What we do is we run over there, and when they pull off the staves off their Loon Liquor, their whiskey, we grab those staves and then we run over to the cidery as fast as we can and drop them into a cider that we're aging for a whole year. So we usually do that between May, I'll probably start next month, and July. I'll go over there every week or two and pull staves and I'll drop it into the tank and it'll age until the next year. And then we'll take, we'll press 1 week and then the next week, probably in October, we'll take that fresh juice and we'll bottle condition it for a dry, sparkling, wood and spirit aged cider. So it's a bridge from 1 year to the next, and it's also a bridge from our friends at Loon to us at Keepsake.
And what kind of wood? Oak?
Oak, yeah. They do their own oak staves there. So what you're going to get in this cider, again, you're going to have your own taste, and I totally encourage you expressing those. But what I get is some pear, apple, obviously a little whiskey and wood in the background. As much as I love whiskey and wood, I'm a big whiskey drinker. I love whiskey, but I also feel like you should have whiskey in one glass and cider in the other, so I try to make it more of a background thing.
I was going
to
say, do they kind of compete against each other, those flavors? Because it seems like, obviously, whiskey is a strong flavor. Apple can be a strong flavor, too.
Yeah, I think they can complement each other really well. I just, for me, I feel like I'm making a cider, so I'm not making, you know.
It smells great.
If you were making whiskey, you should make a whiskey that's whiskey forward. You shouldn't be ashamed to make it a whiskey. You know, I'm not going to call out names, but some of the big whiskey makers tend to be putting a lot of flavors in their whiskey, which makes me wonder. I like, you know, a whiskey that tastes like whiskey, and I like a cider that tastes like cider, but I want a little whiskey in the background in this case.
Did you call this a mid-dry, or what was the term?
Off-dry.
Off-dry.
Yep, just off-dry. So the only way
because it seems like a muted version of the dry. Is that the right way to put it?
Yeah, a little bit rounded out because of that sweetness. Yeah, just and there's literally
very pleasant,
very the tiniest bit of sweetness in this one. We bottle conditioned it. I emailed my hero over in England. If you ever have a chance to try Tom Oliver cider, his cider's the best in the world. It's one of the ciders that I was mentioning before that kind of just opened my eyes to how great cider can be. And I asked him, this is the kind of process I'd never heard anybody try. What we did was we bottle conditioned it for a while, and then we lightly pasteurized it to keep the sweetness in there, because we don't ever use any like sorbates or sulfites or any chemicals, and we don't filter. We decided those three things just didn't work for us. So when we do want to keep a little sweetness in, and it's not an arrested fermentation, which we do sometimes get naturally arrested fermentations, this one we knew we'd had to pasteurize
real
lightly.
Particles float around.
Yep.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, this is called Batch Number 5, the Wooden Spirits Series.
Right.
So, we were talking beforehand that there's so many variables that go into what these batches are going to turn into, the apples. Mm-hmm. And the apples obviously vary based on conditions of soil and how much rain you get and how late the frost is, like this year. I'm assuming that's why it's Batch Number 5, because from batch to batch, they differ, even if you're technically maybe getting all the same stuff put in there, right?
Right. Yeah, and what we did in particular is the juice that we pressed to put in this was always a little bit different, so we realized that made a big difference in the final product. And like this one, for example, like I said, I pasteurized a little bit, so it was gonna be different than the other ones. But even like 3 and 4 of this year were very similar, but I used different juices because it was a different weeks that I pressed, that I realized I can't call these the same, because that, yeah, you know, one of them, for example, had a lot of chestnut crab apple in it. It tasted much different than the batch before it. Because that small, tiny addition of a different apple.
Yeah, there's just a hint of whiskey there on the back. This is very good.
Well, yeah, I'm enjoying it. So, like, I'm trying to figure out how to describe the mouthfeel. And literally, as you drink it, there's the initial taste, there's the middle taste.
Kind of morphs.
Then there's the third taste, and finally the back taste. So, like, literally, there is a variety to this. I wouldn't have expected this, because
it's called complexity.
While you guys are talking, I'm like trying to figure out, like, well, you know, because normally there's, you know, either it's something forward, you know, like in beer, like a hop forward, you know, like you could really get hit with something, or there's a lingering taste. And this one just keeps having several different flavors to it. I'm really surprised by it. I hate to say it, I'm not picking up the staves or the oak specifically, but it obviously is playing a part in it.
Yeah, I don't get that. For what I say in this one, and so the next year, Simeon and Mark and I, we upped the staves. I don't get it except for the smell. The aroma there, there's that wood. But I don't, in the flavor, it doesn't come through as strong at the wood part.
Right, and I get a sweetness right at the very beginning. The very first taste, there's sweetness, and then it dries right out. Yeah, like you said, the smell, there's like, it's really complex. I'm really impressed with this.
That's what we're trying to do. That's what time gives it. That's what putting in different apples. We really are trying to go for the complex product. We want our product to have a lot of personality. You know, I don't think that everybody's going to love it. I know that because I want it. I don't want it to be water. I know people that don't like water. You know, so that wouldn't work either. But I want it to be complex.
Can you let a cider age?
Yes, especially if it's made a bottle conditioned product like that. Current Aronia there. That's a bottle conditioned, unfiltered, unpasteurized, no additives, nothing in there. It's just I'm curious. We're going to be putting that in the cellar, and I'll be probably revisiting that.
What would you expect? What would the complexity be with aging?
And we don't know exactly, because aging in cider in the U.S. at least isn't a popular thing, because usually the big companies are making ciders that are meant to be drank, much like the big beers, fresh, fast, keep these things going, keep the volume going. They don't want people aging there.
Because they want revenue. That's all they care about.
So we don't know. We're trying to figure that out. I think it's going to be much like some sours, some lambics, where it's not going to be like, you know, a 20 years from now a Cabernet, but it's going to be somewhere in that 3 to 6 year where it hits its best spot, where
just gives that a little extra, a little more just character.
Yeah, the yeast, the idolized yeast will be doing some things in there. The flavors will meld really nicely. That's my guess, though. We have some ciders that we've aged 3 years. Some of them are great. Some of them, I think I've missed that spot, you know, after 3 or 4 years, maybe 2 years have been best. But I think, yes, I think some, if ciders are made unfiltered, unpasteurized and bottle conditioned, they have a much better chance of aging. That being said, we have a pasteurized Bright Tank cider that 2 years later is tasting great. Like I was like, man, I should have sat on this for even longer.
Well, as we come to a close here, Nate, where can people find you online so they can keep up with what products you have coming out, where they can check out the progress of the new tasting space, and obviously where to find you in rural Dundas?
Yeah, we're online at keepsakecider.com. We're redoing the website over the next couple months, but there should be a lot of really great content on there to keep tabs on things we're doing, special videos and blogs and events, definitely events. Has a great Facebook page where we definitely keep all of our events on there. It's a good way to keep tab of us. We're on Instagram. Definitely, if you email, we are good to keep in contact with people. And so
I agree. Scheduling this was via email. And you were very responsive.
We try to be responsive. And you usually will talk to me or Tracy, so we usually know the answer.
We'll head out to your local drinking hole that provides off-sale sales, and pick up some keepsake cidery.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for being here, Nate.
Oh, thanks so much, guys. It was really fun.
Cheers.
Hey, this is Andrew Burns, and this week's Style of the Week is Baltic Porter. We've talked about Imperial Stout being a very strong stout meant for export, and one of the places it went was Russia, which is why it's called Russian Imperial Stout. Well, in Russia, they got so hooked on it that they started brewing their own version in the Baltic states called a Baltic Porter. Now, stout and porter are pretty darn similar, so we can see where the name comes from. But what makes a Baltic porter unique is it is a lager. So you take a recipe like an imperial stout. So remember, that's very strong, usually over 8%, very roasty, toasty, lots of coffee and chocolate flavors. And if you take that recipe and ferment it with a lager yeast to give an interesting, clean, smooth finish to it, what you end up with is a Baltic Porter. It's a great hybrid style. You know, it's good for people who like dark, strong beers, but maybe you want to change it up and try something that's a little bit cleaner from that lager fermentation. Delicious.
Well, that's going to put a wrap on this show. Thanks to Nate with Keepsake Cidery for joining us in studio for a long version of the show. Obviously, if you listen to this on radio, you probably didn't get the whole conversation because we went beyond our allotted time. So check us out on ontapnorthfield.com to find the full show as well as prior shows. You can find our old shows also on podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, and a number of other credible podcast platforms. Leave us a rating while you're there. We would love to have you do that. It helps people find us and hear what we're doing in southern Minnesota. We'll have to have Nate back on. That was a great show. As we said at the top of the show, as we said during the interview, holy hell, there's a lot to learn with ciders.
Well, yeah, we've talked to brewers for so long that it's really kind of fun to also hear completely different styles, what they're doing, how they're doing it, what their requirements are, and everything else. So definitely fun.
And as the weather warms here and they get moving ahead on their space, hopefully we can go out there and maybe pay them a visit and kind of do a follow-up show, because I think both of you and I had a number of questions left for Nate just about the process. And again, why apples? Why is he obsessed with apples?
Yep.
No, apples are great. So good job, Nate. And good job, Nate and his wife and their whole team out there. And the ciders were outstanding. I mean, again, it's another opportunity for us. Just as we've had our eyes open with sour beers and a number of other styles, you find the right people who have the passion for it, who make that craft the right way, and you appreciate the product at least on a base level. But if it hits you the right way, flavor wise, then it really just opens your eyes. So, damn, I love this show. I love doing it for that.
Yep. Well, and the funny part is, I was talking to a guy at work saying that we'd interviewed Nate, and he told me straight up. He said it was the best cider that he's ever had. The cider that he's had from Nate, and so
I can agree. I could see
and
that,
it like I said, it opened my eyes. It was really fun. So,
and the hope here, obviously, is that you can feel our interest and the passion with those we have on the show. And you seek out their product. You seek out their space where they might have you to try their product, or you find them in the liquor store and just know more about them and support them, especially if they're good people, make good product. You know, almost everyone on the show has been good people with good product. I'm just kidding. They've all been great. Speaking of good people, we will be back in 2 weeks. That's at 11 a.m. May 12th. If you're listening here on 95 The One, we will have John from Angry Inch Brewing in downtown Lakeville. Now our third guest to come back for a return show, the quote return show. We're actually going to pay him a visit this time and take in his cool space. I know he's got a lot of stuff come up here for the latter part of spring, whenever spring starts, and then into the summer, a lot of cool new beers and kind of return beers and some different events. So it'll be fun catching up with him. I say catch up with him as if we haven't seen him since the last show, because we've seen him,
yeah,
a time or two.
Just a couple.
Yeah. So you can catch us here on the radio. If you don't catch us here on the radio, obviously find us online at the aforementioned places, the website and podcast platforms. Next week here on 95 The One, you can catch Northfield Outdoors. They're here at 11 a.m. in the same slot as us. Just it'll be them instead of us. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Cheers.
Cheers.